From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. A weekend meant to unite Democrats and organize around candidates ahead of the midterm ended with indecision. The California Democratic Party convention was held over 3 days in San Francisco, and the party was unable to endorse a candidate for governor with less than 4 months to the primary. While endorsements for other races sparked a little bit of controversy, particularly in our area, Congresswoman Doris Matsui's reelection campaign, the lack of consensus is raising the alarm on a once highly improbable scenario that is stoking fear among Democrats that the crowded field of Democratic candidates for governor will dilute the vote and lock the party out of the state's top two primary, paving the way for two Republicans to advance to the general election. Blake Jones is a co-author of Politico's California Playbook and was at the convention over the weekend, and he joins us now to distill the political fanfare. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
What was the energy like? And how did it compare to previous ones?
Well, if you think about it, the last Democratic Party convention in the state was last year in Anaheim. And at that point, people were extremely bummed out. They had just had this extremely difficult set of election losses in 2024. The energy was very, very low. By comparison, California Democratic Party activists were a lot more upbeat this time. They were a lot more excited. They had this big win in the fall with the passage of Proposition 50, which redistricted House congressional maps in their favor. So they were definitely a lot more excited. But as you mentioned, there's a lot of anxiety right now about this possibility of many Democrats dividing the vote in the gubernatorial election and locking a Democrat out of the runoff election in November. So there was a lot of concern being brought up constantly throughout the 3 days.
Right. And the party didn't endorse a candidate. I mean, they needed a 60% threshold for a candidate to get the party's endorsement. That wasn't particularly a surprise for you or other political reporters. But what struck you about how the vote shook out?
What struck me is that candidates who have not been performing particularly well in public polling and haven't raised a lot of money actually did fairly well in this very divided vote. For example, you saw the former controller Betty Yee got second, and she's barely been registering in the polls, but of course has served as vice chair of the California Democratic Party and, you know, has some good relationships there. So what stood out to me is that the activist kind of base of the party that shows up to these conventions was, you know, perhaps if anything, even more divided than the average Democratic voter who's paying attention to this election already.
Yeah. How reflective is a convention like the Democratic Party convention and these votes reflective of the actual electorate in the state?
You know, usually not too reflective, I don't think. And, you know, that was shown this weekend. You did see Representative Eric Swalwell, who's been, you know, at or, you know, close to the top of public polling so far. And he did get the most votes in the endorsement. But typically you see two different differences between the electorate and this group of, you know, 3,000 some delegates who are very, very plugged in political types. And, you know, one is just that they have different relationships with a lot of these candidates. And, you know, so that's like a very different way that they're coming at them than like the average voter who has just seen people on TV. And then the second is that they do tend to skew a little bit more to the left of the electorate because these are, you know, such plugged in kind of activist types.
Is it typically uncommon that the Democratic Party in California was unable to endorse a candidate for governor?
Well, this has happened before, but what is uncommon is for there to be so many Democratic candidates vying for the endorsement at this point in the cycle. If you think back to the last time there was an open gubernatorial election in 2018, you know, we saw current Governor Gavin Newsom squaring off against former Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa. And, you know, at that time, things were just a lot more consolidated going into the vote. But yeah, not particularly uncommon, just because you have to get 60% of these delegates to vote for you, even to get the endorsement in the primary. But it is it's extremely uncommon that the leader is just getting, you know, less than a quarter of those delegates, as Eric Swalwell did.
And we've talked about this multiple times when you've joined us for a playbook on Insight, that growing concern among Democrats splitting the vote so much that two Republicans end up making the ticket to the general election. I mean, it is still rare for that to happen. I mean, statistically speaking, unlikely, but that concern has been growing. Did that dominate a lot of conversations over the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, it was coming up constantly, whether I was talking to local party officials or even some of the elected officials that I chatted with from different parts of the state. They were really, really concerned about it. And I think there are a couple of options that keep coming up for how folks in the party want to try to avoid this potential outcome. You know, one is getting some of these lower polling candidates drop out of the race and consolidate the base. But another that, you know, I think has been floated a lot now, which is something that other Democratic candidates have done, which is to boost a Republican and so that they consolidate some of the GOP vote. And you don't have two Republicans splitting a lot of the, you know, a lot of the electorate and somehow making it through. So, you know, it's possible that could happen. I don't know of any concrete plans to boost a Republican, but it, you know, it's happened just as recently as 2024 when Senator Adam Schiff was boosting a Republican and avoiding a runoff election against former Representative Katie Porter.
Yeah, and that wasn't so long ago. The indecision within the Democratic Party in California, I mean, did Republicans use that as fuel over the weekend? I mean, has the Republican Party in California endorsed a candidate for governor?
So the party has not endorsed a candidate for governor. And, you know, I think, to be fair, the Republican Party here is, I think, just as divided on their choice for the gubernatorial race. But yeah, I think there was a little bit of reveling in, you know, any moment of Democratic indecision. For sure. I know I saw the National Republican Campaign Committee was talking about how excited they were about some of the Democratic House primaries being divided. You know, of course, political parties love to see when their opponents are at these moments of indivision. And, you know, typically every party's conventions bring on a lot of that. So they were excited. I don't know how much they, you know, have been able to turn that into something, you know, more tangible, such as, you know, a fundraising opportunity. But it was definitely, you know, a moment of happiness and joy for them.
Is the indecision solely reserved for the governor's race, or are there bigger divides within the Democratic Party right now, you know, such as younger Democrats versus establishment Democrats?
Yeah, so on a little bit more of a surface level, the down ballot statewide races that are open, there also is not an endorsement in any of those. That includes races for treasurer, insurance commissioner, and state superintendent. But, you know, to your last point about some of these ideological and generational divides, those played into a lot of the House race endorsement processes that were happening over the weekend. And one of the more interesting ones that came up was with incumbent Sacramento area Representative Doris Matsui, who, you know, of course, has been in Congress for over two decades now, is pretty well known in the district. But she is also in her 80s now, and she has an upstart challenger, you know, named Mai Vang, who has waged one of the more serious primary challenges that we've seen to an incumbent. And it's drawn out a couple of interesting threads that haven't, you know, always both been involved in some of these primaries. One is just that she's a lot younger, so it is a generational challenge. But the other is that she is challenging Representative Matsui on ideological lines. She's out campaigning, assailing Matsui for taking donations from corporate donors and advocating for a Medicare for all healthcare system. So she's trying to infuse these two, you know, different things into her campaign. And that yielded a really interesting result at the convention, because a lot of the time incumbents don't even have to fight for an endorsement vote at these conventions, because there's this pre-endorsement process that local delegates from their area go through in advance of the convention. And if enough of them vote for the incumbent, then the incumbent doesn't have to worry when everybody gets together. But this time, Mai Vang was able to split away enough people that there was, you know, a vote and a debate among local delegates in her area. But, you know, interestingly, you saw former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi actually came into a caucus meeting at which they were debating this endorsement and spoke in favor of Representative Matsui and advocated for her to get the endorsement and was ultimately successful. So you saw that there was this situation was being taken with such seriousness that one of the most, you know, towering figures in the Democratic Party felt the need to become involved.
Oh, wow. And I did see online that Mai Vang is also the city council member in Sacramento as well. And her campaign, you know, kind of challenged Pelosi stepping in during that moment.
Yeah, her campaign did. And they alleged that Pelosi shouldn't have done that according to their interpretation of some party rules. Ultimately, the party, you know, did not honor that challenge. And they decided that Representative Matsui did, in fact, get the endorsement after a vote. But it, you know, it nevertheless, yeah, showed the way that, you know, some folks who are kind of in the grassroots of the party are, in some ways kind of taking the fight to some more establishment figures.
Staying with the former House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi also delivered a speech over the weekend. She's rounding out her last few months of her final term before retiring and not running after nearly 40 years in Congress. How significant was this moment over the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was really massive. She did get another kind of send-off 2 years ago when, you know, she was fading out as House Speaker and people were not sure whether she was going to run for Congress again during that cycle. So this is, in a way, was kind of a second goodbye for Representative Pelosi. But it was still major in a lot of ways because, you know, she was by far the most prominent person, you know, at the convention, I think. And then, you know, secondarily, she, you know, has just been a mentor to a lot of the other House members who were there and has been such a force in the fundraising and, you know, party support. I mean, obviously nationally, but for the California Democratic Party, she's been incredibly significant, even dating back to Proposition 50 when they did the redistricting campaign last fall she was involved in. So this really is a send off to just one of the, you know, most, you know, significant California Democrats ever.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Blake Jones, co-author of Politico's California Playbook, about the California Democratic Party convention, which was held over the weekend in San Francisco. So California's top Democrat, Governor Newsom, he was not present over the weekend. What does that say?
Well, he is on a book tour right now, as a matter of fact, that he launched on Saturday. And he is traveling the country. He's going to red states and doing this in his last year as governor rather than, you know, kind of showing up with the local party rank and file in his home state. And, you know, certainly considering he's likely to run for president in 2028, it might be understandable that he'd be spending his time in states where he is perhaps not as well known or, you know, doesn't have as much of a base. And so, yeah, I think it makes sense from that standpoint. And, you know, I will say he was in the Bay Area on Friday. He did an announcement at San Quentin at the, you know, prison that he has tried to kind of change into more of a rehabilitation focused Scandinavian model before heading out of town. But yeah, I think it shows where his head is at right now, and his head is at crisscrossing the country and building his name, ID, and favorability elsewhere.
Any indication if he will endorse a candidate for governor?
No, I don't think we really have gotten even any kind of tea leaves there. I think he's kind of tried to stay out of it as far as I can tell. I think staying away from the convention was another good opportunity to avoid any sort of pressure to do some traffic copping in this crowded race. And, you know, it also allowed him to stay away from some of these messy primary fights that probably really only have downside political risk for him to get involved in.
Yeah, I mean, staying on that topic, I mean, how did the party strategize on how to win those swing districts in Congress? I mean, California often determines who controls the House, and California Democrats did get that big win with redistricting.
Yeah, so, you know, let's look back and remember that the redistricting fight was intended to pick up five different Republican-held seats in Congress. But just based on the way that the maps were drawn, there are still, you know, two seats that I think are going to be quite a fight for Democrats to pick up here, especially one in the Central Valley held by Republican Representative David Valadao, who's been really, really difficult for Democrats to oust. So as far as the strategy going into the weekend goes, you know, no one was endorsed in the races to take on either Representative Valadao or Representative Daryl Issa, who's another Republican incumbent who was targeted by the measure. And so, you know, basically there wasn't like a broader overarching strategy about like who you choose and, you know, who is going to run against these folks. You'll see more of that after the primary in June when Democrats are able to align behind one person. But yeah, just this is not the point where there is some broad consolidation and coalescing behind a candidate.
Well, it is crunch time. I mean, the primary is just a few months away. Of course, it's a midterm election year. What traction does this convention have just beyond the event itself and the pomp and circumstance? What does the party or even the candidates do with what transpired over the weekend? How does it actually shape the primary or even the general?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are skeptical that some of these endorsement votes are really going to have a huge impact on some of these races, to be honest with you. You know, if someone is able to get the party endorsement, which, as we said, is pretty difficult, then that can be helpful because you can communicate to voters that you're the party pick. You can put the California Democratic Party seal of approval on a mailer or on a broadcast ad, and that's great for you, maybe. But you, even then, you have to have the money to be able to communicate that kind of thing to voters. And especially because so many races did not have somebody endorse them over this weekend, I think that it's probably not going to play too influential of a role in, you know, who eventually wins.
Well, Blake, thank you for joining us. I know it was a busy weekend for you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Blake Jones is a co-author of Politico's California Playbook, discussing the California Democratic Party convention, which was held over the weekend in San Francisco. Up next, gray wolves have made a remarkable comeback to California, but that return has sparked an ongoing debate over the best ways to coexist with this endangered species. We'll continue an ongoing conversation about striking the right balance. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.